Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
From Portland, Oregon, ladies and gentlemen. Think of it. First of all, I want to thank folks at the Ashland Independent Film Festival, where The Big Uneasy played this week, and where I'm embarrassed to say it, ladies and gentlemen, but I actually got an award. I know, don't tell the Grammy or the Emmy or the Oscar people, but I did. I got a Rogue Award, and lest you think it's descriptive of, you know, the recipient in any way, Ashland is located in the Rogue River Valley. The Rogue River runs through it. If the event had taken place 100 miles north, I would have gotten the Klamath Award. It's just, you know, it's just a geographical happenstance. And as I say, now I'm in Portland, where things run a little slower. I don't want to say things run slowly in Portland, but at the end of March, they turn their clock backwards. And then at the end of fall, they turn it backwards again for another round. One of these days, they'll catch up. But it was not easy, lest you think it's easy to get from, let's say, a Los Angeles to an Ashland, Oregon. Not when you're flying Horizon Airlines. Yes, it's an airline horror story, ladies and gentlemen. The airline nightmare of the week is thanks to Horizon. And remember, Horizon is three-quarters of horizontal, which tells you something about their skill at flying. So my producer and I get into this plane, and we're heading from Medford, the nearest airport, to Ashland in Oregon. And before we get on, they say, you know, some nasty-looking weather coming to Medford. We may have to divert to Portland. And my producer said, well, but we're going to fly, right? He said, yo, no, we wouldn't put you on the plane if we weren't going to land in Portland. Now we're in the air. It's a two-hour flight to Medford, an hour and 30 minutes into the flight. Pilot comes on the intercom. Ladies and gentlemen, we got some bad news for you. There's some weather in Medford, and appears we're having a problem with our de-icer. And so company management has ordered us to return to Los Angeles. Not going to land in San Francisco or any place, you know, along the way. No, we're going all the way back to Los Angeles. Not an apology, you know, not just, but company management. Isn't that management? I thought operations determined where planes. Anyway, so now we land, and, you know, there's some disgruntlement abroad in the aisles, and we decide that we're going to pass up the airline's offer to get on another plane in the fine Horizon fleet, because they say in their announcement, we're going to move you to another plane, we're going to do a really quick pre-flight check, and then we'll have you in the air shortly. And I'm thinking, that's reassuring. Really quick pre-flight, unlike the one that you did that missed the problem with the de-icer. So we decide, no, we'll take a flight the next day on a real airline. Can we just please have our bags back? Okay, we'll stand here on the tarmac, and we're bringing the bags. So a cart comes, and a guy from, you know, with an airline shirt on says, all right, pick out your bags. They're right here. And we take our bags, and there's a van. The people who are continuing, going on the other flight, or on a bus, just sitting there, crammed into this bus, looking a little forlorn. And we're on the tarmac with our bags, and up comes a van to take us to the terminal. And the driver of the van says, he opens the back of the van, and I push my rolling bag toward him, and he said, oh, no, you can't put those in here. What do you mean? No, we can't take those bags. We're going into a sterile area. Yeah, but the bags have just been on the plane. They haven't been, no, you can't. Not, you can, yeah. Well, why would the guy take the bags off the cart and give them to us if we couldn't? Oh, he doesn't work for the airline. Oh, I see. He's just allowed to stand on the tarmac and commandeer luggage carts, but he doesn't. Remember a couple of weeks ago I said they'll say anything? It doesn't matter? So anyway, now we go back into the terminal to get our refund, ladies and gentlemen. And same guy who said you can't take your bags on the thing is there and processes the thing. And he says, okay, your cost of your flight is now returned to your credit card. And I'm dumb enough to say, how about the $40 I paid to check my bags? Oh, no, you'll have to talk to Horizon about that. See, now he has his Alaska Airlines hat on. We're standing underneath a sign that says Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air, but he has the wrong hat on. If that's not scary enough, the World Health Organization is calling for more urgent action to deal with drug-resistant infections after a bacteria which resists almost all antibiotics has been discovered. The WHO issued a stark warning that the world is on the brink of the post-antibiotic era, when many common infections will no longer have a cure. So we'll all look like the Japanese people that walk around with the masks on, or like Michael Jackson. And there may be a new culprit in the crisis after a gene which makes bugs resistant to drugs was discovered in the drinking water of one of the world's biggest cities, New Delhi. It's a losing battle given top priority by WHO Director General Dr. Margaret Chan. She says the world is on the brink of losing these miracle cures. The emergence and spread of drug-resistant pathogens has accelerated. 440,000 new cases of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis detected last year. The malaria parasite is acquiring resistance. Resistance is also emerging to the antiretroviral medicines used to treat people with HIV. The world, she says, is heading towards a post-antibiotic era where common infections will once again kill unabated. See? Makes Horizon Air look kind of benign by comparison. The buried lead department, ladies and gentlemen, in a long story about the problems of a law firm, the Baum Law Firm. They're involved in the F-Baum crisis. The Baum Law Firm, which was dealing in a lot of foreclosures. Foreclosure mill is the derogatory way of referring to them. Way down at the bottom of that story in the New York Times comes this. Speaking generally and not specifically about the Baum firm, Raymond Brescia, assistant professor of law at Albany Law School, says, quote, we're seeing a disproportionate number of cases in the foreclosure context where questionable filings have been made. He continues, I think it's easy to say this is the largest and most wide-ranging fraud against the courts in the United States, unquote. But that would be at the bottom of the story, you see, ladies and gentlemen, because that's not the thing. By the way, just to clarify, if I ever do get the, you know, we're pursuing the $40 that I had to pay to check my bags at Horizon. But I want to say publicly, Horizon can keep the $40 if they use it to buy a new de-icer. Hello, welcome to the show.
I glance with you instead.
from cloudy, rainy Portland, Oregon. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. Speaking of Portland, this very region's Jesuits have formalized their bankruptcy reorganization plan this week, promising that they and their insurers will pay $166 million to settle sex abuse claims made by more than 500 people against priests who worked in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. It spells out the ways, does this plan, that the Jesuits will apologize for the harm that priests did to people, mostly children, dating back to the 1940s. Safeco will pay $118 million. The region's Jesuits will contribute $43 million. $6.5 million set aside in a reserve fund for future abuse claims in case, the abuse couldn't be continuing, could it? The settlement was designed to restore financial ability to the Portland-based Jesuits, one of the largest payments ever made by a religious organization in the United States to compensate abuse victims. The top Jesuit official in the area, known as the Provincial, could have been the Metropolitan, but no, the Orthodox have that. He's expected to send letters of apology to those claiming abuse by its priests. Letters of apology, quote, will state that the abuse claimant was not at fault for the abuse, and that the province and the recognized debtor takes responsibility for its part in the abuse. The Provincial will personally sign the letters of apology. So no robo-signers for the Jesuits. What are they? Foreclosure mills? Also in news of the godly, the Catholic Church of Denmark now steps up. And by stepping up, I mean steps down. It's being criticized for the secrecy and inaction in handling cases of several priests accused of sexual abuse against young men. It's as if it's spreading or something. It's as if it's immune to antibiotics or something. The complaints follow the announcement by the church that it had completed the last and most extensive investigation into the case of a priest who was suspended last year after being accused by five separate people of indecent exposure and sexual abuse. The church announced the official investigation had been completed, and the priest would retire with a pension as a result.
And the watch, maybe, Mrs., for the thing, so he knows what time to do the abuse?
The church declined to reveal what its investigation uncovered or why the priest retired. Our conclusion is that the case is closed and the suspension is lifted. The priest then asked if he could retire, said the church spokesman. The bishop of the Diocese of Copenhagen wrote in a letter to the complainants that the church had not been able to determine whether the complaints were well-founded and therefore chose to give the priest the benefit of the doubt. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I say give him the watch. And now, the apologies of the week. Shanghai Group, China's top meat processor, has apologized for using clenbuterol-contaminated pork. Wan Long, chairman of the board, made an apology to consumers on behalf of the company at a conference attended by all management team members, dealers, and media. This is the second time the company has apologized after it was exposed using clenbuterol-added pork in its meat products. Clenbuterol is banned as an additive in pig feed in China because it can end up in the flesh of pigs and is poisonous to humans. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, it's a fine additive. Wan announced six measures to prevent this thing from happening again, including strengthening security monitoring and supervision, introducing third-party inspections, and improving its industrial chain. How about just not using the clenbuterol? That would be... Hey, here's an apology from Horizon Air... No, not to me. It's the story of a 6'9" Horizon Air passenger who was removed from the plane after a flight attendant asked him to remove his long legs out of the aisle. Here's what Horizon now says about the incident. Quote, we have apologized to this passenger for his experience on board our flight. What should have happened in this scenario is the flight attendants should have asked for passengers seated in an exit or bulkhead row to voluntarily give up their seats to provide the passenger with the much-needed legroom he requires. Moving him to a seat with more legroom would have ensured the aisle was clear, but that didn't happen, and he was wrongly removed from the plane. We apologize for how this situation was handled and compensated the passenger the value of his ticket of a future flight, which he found acceptable. Hey, 6'9" guy, make sure they pay you back for the bags. Dateline Taipei, a Taiwan television station, apologized this week for a program in which two actors parodied the Japanese emperor and empress visiting earthquake and tsunami victims. I'm laughing already. CTI TV issued the apology after some Japanese folks saw footage of the People's Biggest Party show and complained. The network said in a statement, "The producer wanted to show in a humorous way that the Japanese emperor and empress are close to the people and had no intention to ridicule them. As the show has caused misunderstanding and ill feeling among some Japanese friends, we offer our deepest apology. CTI has always been a friend of Japanese people." See? You have a friend in a Taiwanese network. The Rupert Murdoch-owned tabloid newspaper in London, The News of the World, has printed an apology in its latest edition over a long-running scandal involving its reporters hacking the phones of celebrities. The paper said of the victims, quote, "Here today we publicly and unreservedly apologize to all such individuals." It added in a page 2 article that the hacking, quote, "should not have happened and was and remains unacceptable." The News of the World's owner, News International, has admitted there were at least 8 victims and has put aside £20 million for compensation. Paper said a number of individuals had brought breach of privacy claims over wrongful voicemail interceptions between 2004 and 2006. Others are threatening to do so. It continued, evidence has recently come to light which supports some of these claims. This is after 2 years in which News of the World and News International and News Corp vehemently denied any such charges. But, you know, it's just news. Deadline Norfolk, Virginia, the principal of Sewell's Point Elementary School has apologized to parents for a teacher's classroom exercise last week that cast her black and mixed-race fourth graders as available for sale. The apology came after the teacher separated the students from their white classmates and auctioned them. The exercise was part of an April 1st class on the Civil War. Hey, it's April Fool's Day! You're slaves! The lesson could have been thought through more carefully, said the principal in a letter to the parents. Ireland's police chief has been forced to apologize for the behavior of several officers who were unwittingly recorded joking about raping 2 women protesters in their custody. Commissioner Martin Callanan said 5 members of his force have been confined to desk duties. Here, joke about this. While the police watchdog investigates, "I'm sorry for the offense caused to the community we serve and for the hurt and pain felt in particular by victims of sexual crime," Callanan said. The apology came just hours after the 2 women protesters involved went public to demand an inquiry into the policing of Shell Oil's gas pipeline project on the North Mayo coastline. Yes, Mayo has a coastline. It's spreadable. A day after sending an email to AOL freelancers, some in the process of being fired, inviting them to contribute to the Huffington Post's non-paid blogger system, only to clarify and apologize for the erroneous memo, movie phone editor Patricia Chui is out of a job. She was fired by John Montorio, editorial director for AOL's entertainment and lifestyle section. Hey, didn't he used to work for the LA Times? Yes, he did, which includes movie phone. The decision was made by John Montorio, who believes it imperative that all Huffington Post Media Group editors are on the same page when it comes to our vision of building a great team of full-time editors, writers, and reporters. We're all clear that this vision doesn't include asking freelance writers to become unpaid bloggers, something we never have done and will never do. But they apologize. And Waukesha, Wisconsin County Clerk Kathy Nicholas apologized for human error this week that she blamed for failing to include the city of Brookfield's vote totals in the tally she reported to the media election night this week in that very contentious race for Supreme Court judgeship in Wisconsin. The mistake and 2 other changes in the county helped net Justice David Prosser 7,500 votes over Joanne Kloppenburg and swung the race dramatically in his favor. Just coincidence that it did that, I guess. Nicholas said she failed to properly save a spreadsheet after inputting the Brookfield numbers election night, leading to the error. Once she ran the report to show the aggregate numbers for the county, she assumed incorrectly the Brookfield numbers were included. She said the mistake was discovered yesterday during the canvass. She stressed it was not a case of votes being found. The purpose of the canvass, she said, is to catch these kinds of errors. There were two other changes in municipal vote totals in the county. Not explained. The Democratic member of the County Board of Canvass defended the process, but they apologized. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. And I think at this point in the broadcast, it might be advisable to check up on security conditions around the country. No better way to do this than with tales of airport security. Mark from Pittsburgh has our first tale this week. Dear Harry, returning from Manchester, New Hampshire to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I went to the check-in counter to change my seats. The nice agent helped me out and provided new boarding passes. I showed my boarding pass to the TSA agent, who looked carefully at my name and my ID, and the boarding pass, initialed the boarding pass, and sent me through. Once at the gate, I decided to gate check my bag. The gate agent asked me if my final destination was Tampa. I said, no, it's Pittsburgh. Now, both of us were confused. She started checking her computer. I glanced at my boarding pass and, lo and behold, noted that it was for Kaylee, not Mark. Same last name. The agent said, TSA messed up. How could they after carefully checking my ID? Maybe TSA is more interested in holograms than actually checking the matching of names. On boarding documents, says Mark from Pittsburgh. But it's not just airlines anymore, or air travel anymore. Jeff writes, I recently had a little time before a freelance job in St. Louis, so I drove over that morning to see the amazing Gateway Arch. I didn't realize you have to go through airport-type screening now, run by the National Park Service. I had a lot of things in my pocket since I was on my way to work. I do special effects for TV commercials and movies, so I often have a diverse collection of small tools in my overall pockets. I apologized to the Park Service security staff, explaining I didn't realize I'd be screened. They were very understanding about it. And I started unloading. Among the dozen or so small tools were two kinds of lasers, small paintbrushes, hemostats, scissors, a pencil-sized X-Acto knife, and a Leatherman multi-tool. They poked through the pile and finally called a supervisor. She examined the items and confiscated just the disposable one-inch long number 11 blade at the tip of the X-Acto knife handle. She was apologetic but firm. But I was able to bring in the 3-inch double-bladed Leatherman multi-tool, and I did say very pleasantly, so just to clarify, you've got no problem with this tool? I flipped one of its pair of 3-inch blades open. But I can't bring in the tiny blade? Sorry, she said. It's a box cutter. All right then, I said. We both shrugged and smiled. Tales of airport and National Park Service security. An updatedly copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This is the show. Took me a moment to remember what show I'm doing. And ladies and gentlemen, a year ago, Madonna laid the ceremonial first brick. Stay with me now for a planned $15 million girls' academy in Malawi. Last week, it was announced that despite the fundraising success of Raising Malawi, the foundation, the charitable foundation she founded, which collected a reported $18 million in donations and spent $3.8 million on the planned academy, the girls' school has been abandoned, will not be built, and the foundation itself has imploded. Madonna's partner in the foundation, a mysterious and controversial organization called the Kabbalah Center International, is now a focus of federal investigators, according to Newsweek's Wayne Barrett. The center is a Jewish mystical organization that follows a set of esoteric teachings called Kabbalah. Madonna said she turned to Kabbalah in 1996 when she was pregnant, exhausted from Evita. Hey, who wasn't? And looking for an anchor. She's reportedly donated at least $18 million to the Kabbalah Center, founded by Philip Berg, a Brooklyn-born New York life insurance agent, whose first wife happened to be the niece of a famous Kabbalist, Rabbi Yehuda Brandwein. Berg had 8 children with her, but soon after the rabbi's death in 1969, he left his wife for his former secretary, Karen. Hey, if it's good enough for Newt Gingrich, 2 years later, they launched their own brand of Kabbalism, popularizing what until then had been teachings reserved for advanced Talmudic scholars. Four of the 5 Berg families live in Beverly Hills mansions owned and remodeled by the center. Building permits alone on 3 of the Berg homes total $1.5 million. Karen and Phillip's house, the third the center has provided for them in the past decade, boasts a $30,000 swimming pool. The center routinely pays the expenses accumulated by the two. The center covers the Berg family's food, furniture, clothing, gas, nannies, tutors, gardeners, housekeepers, personal assistants, and more exotic indulgences such as luxury cars, first-class flights, and spas. The Berg's lifestyle, one executive says, is 100% subsidized. Kabbalah Center tax attorney Shane Hamilton uses a strange formulation here. He contends the Bergs include ordained rabbis who, quote, are treated as ministers of the gospel, unquote. I didn't know Jews had gospels. And thus are entitled to, quote, a parsonage as part of their compensation. There have also been several civil suits filed recently alleging the Kabbalah Center had exploited the trust of wealthy followers in order to pillage their bank accounts. The center told Newsweek its Malawi fundraising efforts had brought in $12.5 million in donations and it had spent $10.6 million to fund Malawi activities since 2006. These numbers, says Newsweek, cannot be verified. Madonna staged 2 elaborate ceremonies within 6 months of each other, a groundbreaking in the bricklaying event that reportedly cost $106,000. Only $850,000 of the $3.8 million spent on the academy was actually paid out in Malawi. The lion's share, almost $3 million, was spent by the Kabbalah Center's office in Los Angeles. I know it doesn't sound very good read out like this. It sounds even worse when you sing it.
Cheering. say that I sinned. You know, the foundation that was my creation. All day we chanted for success. Now we signal SOS. Like a charity, helping poor girls go to school. Like a charity.
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Yes, our friend the Addy is in the house. It's nuclear power. Our friend the Atom, on stage, Addy.
All right. Hey.
Scores of nuclear power plants worldwide are at risk from tsunamis or earthquakes similar to the natural disasters that crippled Japan's Fukushima reactors. According to new research, many at-risk plants are in countries less able to cope with the disaster than Japan, experts have warned. 76 operating power stations in Japan, Taiwan, China, South Korea, India, Pakistan, and the U.S. are located in areas close to coastlines deemed vulnerable to tsunamis. More than 1 in 10 nuclear power plants globally are situated in places deemed to be at high or extreme risk of earthquakes. And, Dateline Montpelier, Vermont, federal regulators knew when they renewed the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant's license last month that electrical cables serving key safety systems at the plant had been submerged in water for extended periods of time, according to Nuclear Regulatory Commission documents. See, water is actually good for electric cables, and I'll tell you why. Because, check back with me on this in a couple days, and I will tell you. A nuclear watchdog group says the issue has new urgency following the nuclear disaster in Japan, in which tsunami flooding knocked out cooling systems, causing reactors to overheat. An NRC report in December said 23 reactors around the country had electrical cable failures between 1988 and 2004, with 9 more instances since 2007 of cables improperly being submerged in water. No, look, water is good for electricity. Why don't you read? Because these cables are not designed or qualified for submerged or moist environments, the possibility that more than one cable could fail has increased, the report said. This failure could disable safety-related accident mitigation systems. It's from the NRC. The agency's documents show it has been concerned about submerged electrical cables at U.S. nuke plants for years. They get wet from rain, melting snow, or groundwater, said the NRC. Well, thank God no animals are. The December report said, you'll be glad to know this, ladies and gentlemen, the agency would not require any changes by the industry, even though some individual plants have been faulted for lax maintenance and have promised to take corrective action. But that's because the water is... So why don't you... What is it that you don't understand? By the way, it was a nice touch in Japan when the helicopters were dropping water on the nuclear plants trying to cool them, and at least one expert quoted by the New York Times said, well, all that did was just get some generators wet. That was helpful. The Japanese government neither consulted nor informed Korea about its plan to discharge some 10,000 tons of contaminated water from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant into the sea. Yet, according to Japan's TBS television, Tokyo did discuss the matter with the United States in advance, and they agreed it's feasible to dump water tainted with low levels of radioactivity into the sea rather than storing it, unless there are other options available. Could put it on a Horizon airplane. The Tokyo also told the IAEA of its decision, but did not tell individual neighboring countries because the water was released on the Pacific side and water doesn't circulate, you see. Don't you know anything about water? Once Japan's complex stops spewing radiation and its reactors cool down, making the site safe and removing the ruined equipment is going to be a messy ordeal that could take decades and cost hundreds of millions of dollars. Toshiba, which supplied four of the six reactors, including two in which GE collaborated, that's collaboration. They submitted a roadmap this past week to the plant's operator for decommissioning the crumbled reactors. The study done with three other companies says it would take about 10 years to remove the fuel rods in the reactors and contain other radioactivity at the site. The timeline is far faster than those for other nuclear accidents and contains a big caveat. The reactors must first be stabilized and cooled. Okay, then. We'll get right. Oh. Nearly 1 month after Japan's devastating nuclear accident, atomic energy experts, regulators, and politicians around the world are still puzzling over a basic question: how much danger is still posed by the plant? That depends to a considerable extent, says the New York Times, on how hot the uranium fuel rods are and whether the fuel has escaped its containment. Yet remarkably little is known for sure about what is really happening inside the reactors. Some areas remain far too radioactive for workers to approach, and some instruments have malfunctioned. Good thing to have happen in a nuclear accident, don't you think? The Hearst Connecticut Media Group reports that in an effort to preserve profits, New England's nuclear power plant operators are stuffing spent nuclear fuel rods. I think we had this last week. But New England's electricity consumers and nuclear plant owners have poured close to $1 billion into a federal waste fund for the past three decades, honoring their end of a bargain with the feds to finance the permanent storage of thousands of tons of spent fuel from the region's reactors. What they've gotten is an empty $11 billion hole in Nevada. The promise of the U.S. government to remove the radioactive waste now broken, and mounting bills that could still saddle New England with at least five mothballed plants and dozens of dry spent fuel casks, turning communities into mini nuclear waste dumps for decades, if not forever. This is according to New England website. It's the most expensive dry hole we've ever built, says Dave Lockbaum, a nuclear engineer. New England plants, among the nation's oldest, have already generated over 4,200 tons of spent fuel. At least one nuclear plant is seeking U.S. Regulatory Commission approval to raid funds set aside to decommission its plant to cover mounting fuel costs, mounting costs for storing spent fuel, raising concerns about its plans to pay for the future dismantling and cleanup costs. That's the future. Regional plants in New England have a bleak history of underestimating decommissioning costs by hundreds of millions, shifting those unanticipated costs onto taxpayers and ratepayers far into the future. And operators or owners of some New England plants have a limited liability corporate structure, meaning taxpayers could be financially responsible for a plant disaster. It's clean. Too safe to meet her, ladies and gentlemen. It's our friend the atom. Addie, can you find your way out?
I think so.
Okay. He's just going to... Oh! Went through the glass window. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, Dateline Texas. Don't you think? Don't you think it's time to look at Texas now? After all the time they've spent looking at us. Two of Texas' ugliest racial atrocities were a massacre in Anderson County in East Texas and a complete expulsion of African Americans from Comanche County in the West. Confederate heritage groups started celebrating their unofficial history month on April 1st. Those two Texas courthouses flew the Confederate flag. only a week after the Texas House of Representatives recognized the African Americans in Anderson County who were chased away or killed a century ago in what is now known as the Slocum Massacre. Palestine, Texas mayor and council voted to recommend that the Sons of Confederate Veterans take down a Confederate flag it had raised at the courthouse. It was taken down. The mayor and council members of all colors said they wanted the flag down not because of complaints, but because it's bad for business. Again, ladies and gentlemen, just pointing out, whatever else you may think the Confederate battle flag means or doesn't mean, it's the flag of the losers. And losers don't get to fly their flags on the planet we occupy. But they do get an anthem.
Southland, land of cotton and loam. Losers got to have a place to call home. Secession, well, it's the source of our pride, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. On our state flag, the X marks the spot. It took bravery to fight for slavery. That's how we're inclined, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Always left behind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Jackson, it's Anglo-Saxon no more. Macon, you be shaken when you go to the store. Throughout our states, there is this deep divide, 'cause our kinfolk were on the losing side. Yeah, our kinfolk were on the losing side. Oh, the stars and bars will never be forgot. We're Johnny Reb and not some Hottentot. It took bravery for slavery. You can't be colorblind when you're with the losing kind. This ain't what we design, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Oh, we love our flag, it says just who we are. Fancy house, we got no fancy car. It takes bravery to forget about slavery. We don't watch, we rewind, 'cause we're just the losing kind. Surrenders what we signed, 'cause we're just the losing.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the war, won't you?
Soft, listen to the war.
Whitening clouds by spraying them with seawater, proposed as a technical fix for climate change, could do more harm than good, according to new research. Whiter clouds reflect more solar energy back into space, cooling the Earth, but a study presented at the European Geosciences Union meeting found that using water droplets of the wrong size would lead to warming, not cooling. Uh-oh. One of the theory's scientific fathers said, It should be possible to make sure droplets were the correct size. Sure it should, sir. Absolutely. What could go wrong? New York is a major loser and Reykjavik a winner from new forecasts of sea level rise in different regions. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change says sea levels rise would at least a foot by the year 2100. That's a global average. Now a Dutch team has made what appears to be the first attempt to model all the factors leading to regional variations. Ocean currents and differences in the temperature and salinity of seawater are among the factors that mean sea level currently varies by up to a meter across the oceans. If currents change with global warming, which is expected, and if regions such as the Arctic become less saline as ice sheets discharge their contents into the sea, the regional patterns of peaks and troughs will change. Everybody will still have the impact, and in many places they will get the average rise, but places like New York are going to have a larger contribution than the average, 20% more. And Reykjavik will be better off. New York sees the biggest increase in sea level from the global average. Others who do that also are Vancouver, Tasmania, and the Maldives. Just like John Barry says in The Big Uneasy, New York fares worse from sea level rise than New Orleans. The surface area of sea ice in the Arctic Ocean shrank this winter to one of the lowest levels in decades. More bad news for polar bears. Only in 2006 was there as little ice during a northern hemisphere winter, nearly 8% less this year than the average recorded from 79 to 2000. And social scientists are struggling with a perplexing earth science question. As the power of evidence showing human-made global warming is rising, why do opinion polls suggest public belief in the findings is wavering? Part of the answer may be that some people are too easily swayed by the easiest, most irrational piece of evidence at hand, their own estimation of the day's temperature where they live. News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And yeah, there's no news in the WikiLeaks stuff. Like this week, we learned that a billionaire Yemeni sheikh met with a high-ranking officer from the U.S. Embassy in Yemen less than 2 years ago and revealed a secret plan now apparently unfolding to overthrow the president of Yemen and warned of the weakness of the president. Despite the warnings, the Obama administration continued to embrace President Saleh and became increasingly dependent on him to combat al-Qaeda. Who could have imagined the warnings come true? Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe. The USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America by the shortwave giant WBCQ, 7.415 megahertz. Shortwave? Really? Yes. Despite the size of the water droplets. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network. I said that already. But around the world also via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want at harryshear.com and kcrw.com. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd be just like the guy putting on his Horizon hat, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The show chapeau, I say, to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. And thanks to the Alpha Broadcasting Gang here in Portland for helping to make today's show possible. Or impossible, depending on your attitude. the email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard here on. Just part of the wonderland of digital curiosities available for your perusal at harryshearer.com. And you can find out where and when to see The Big Uneasy. It's opened this weekend in Pittsburgh. Hello, Pittsburgh. And around the country, near you, either now or soon. Find all the information at thebiguneasy.com. Don't tell NPR, okay? I'd do another hour, but the de-icer is failing. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Production and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from Portland.